Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Questlove, and Cate Blanchett. In recent weeks, I talked to actor Dan Levy, director Ava DuVernay, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating.
I got a big heart, and I'm very forgiving, but, like, don't abuse it. It's been abused enough.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Hey fam, I'm Simone Boyce.
I'm Danielle Robay.
And we're the hosts of The Bright Side, the podcast from Hello Sunshine that's guaranteed to light up your day.
Like our recent episode with sisters Regina and Raina King about the why behind their production company, Royal Ties.
We have such a huge love for storytelling without walls, without barriers.
Listen to The Bright Side from Hello Sunshine on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been another busy news week, and we like to review the major stories of the week here on the Black Information Network. Today, we are joined by Black Information Network news anchors Morgan Wood and Bree Wood to discuss this week's major stories. This is the Black Information Network Daily Podcast, and I'm your host, Ramses Ja. Morgan and Bree, my two faves, welcome back to the show. How have you been? Morgan, you first.
Oh, man, I'm great. Feels good to be back.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Bree, what about you?
Hey, I'm doing very well. Thank you. Happy to be here.
I love it. Okay, well, we got some news to get to, don't we?
First,
presidential campaign at an all-time low this week when the former president's son made some interesting comments about his personal connection to Black male voters. So, Bree, why don't we kick things off with you? Give us more on this story. And then, of course, Morgan will follow up with you.
Well, Donald Trump Jr., of course, he's the son of former President Donald Trump. He claimed that several Black men are now considering him their hero for his father's political campaign, I guess. He made the statement on his show. He has a show called Triggered, where he interviews different people and just talks about whatever. But he was speaking with a guest on the show and remarked that several Black men have approached him personally to let him know that they now support Trump and they are aware of the, quote, rigged system. And they're not buying into what he is calling the propaganda of trying to ruin his father's presidential campaign, you know, with these lawsuits and everything that's going on. He said Black voters are catching on to this. And there's a shift in the political stances of Black people, particularly men. Now, we know that this has been an issue for the Democratic Party as far as them trying to do more outreach. The numbers do show that while they're not necessarily supporting a Republican candidate, Black and Hispanic men are not enthusiastic about the Democratic Party or Joe Biden, not as much as they were back in 2020. So they are slowly losing support, the Democratic Party, from these demographics. And experts are noting that Donald Trump has been gaining while they are losing. And I'm not sure exactly what is causing that, aside from what a lot of people are saying based on these different polls that are out. The economy, things that are kitchen table issues, and Black people, among everybody else, are just looking at the facts and about, you know, what's in their bank account right now. And they are considered, they are considering how their personal well-being has been taken into account during this presidential term. And a lot of Black people feel that while there have been some strides made, that the Democratic Party and the Biden administration is still not addressing the Black community specifically and our needs. You know, they're back on that. Oh, hey, we're willing to give Donald Trump a chance because at least we have more money. So I don't know how true that is for everybody, but they're saying that, you know, thinking like that is increasing Trump support.
OK, Morgan, let's get your thoughts.
Yes, I think this is a case of the apple don't fall far from the tree.
And I just like to speak to the audacity of the comment. Last week in South Carolina, at a conservative Black Federation or at the conservative Black Federation in Columbia, South Carolina, an event for Black conservatives, the former president, Donald Trump, the daddy, said that Black people like him because they can see him as being, or they can relate to him being discriminated against and relate to his multiple indictments. He also said the lights were so bright in his eyes that he couldn't see many people out there. He can only see the Black ones. Mm-hmm. Now, I know this was an event for Black people, but I just feel like that type of commentary speaks to the audacity that his son feels the need to be able to, that he's able to say those things that he's saying. I mean, I'm not sure who went up to him. It would have been nice to, you know, get a name or video, a receipt or something to right. that and understand the true context of what it is he was saying in terms of him being a hero. But I just think this is a matter of audacity, and I blame the daddy. I'm gonna blame the daddy.
Sure, sure. Honestly, they their sense of self-worth is impressive. Mm-hmm. You know, their self-image, their self-concept is impressive. They really think highly of themselves. And I could see why, you know, growing up white, wealthy in this country, and then, you know, being a president, going all these rallies, and then having the numerous blind spots that they have, you know, the world probably looks like, yeah, I'm him, right? And so, you know, any Black man that comes and shakes your hand or whatever, you know, you when you get that much attention, you're bound to get a couple of people that'll say some goofy stuff to you. And, you know, that further shapes your reality because, again, of those blind spots. So I have no doubt that somebody, just because we're a celebrity obsessed culture, somebody probably came up to this guy and was like, oh, my God, you're my hero. But what has Donald Trump Jr. done heroic ever in his life? You know, you could make an argument that for some people, the actual president has done something heroic. Sure, there are people that would make that argument, but his son, you know, it's odd that he would lean into that on his show called Triggered. You know, just the name of the show, it just kind of shows kind of. It feels like an aggressive title, like a violent title. You know what I mean? And again, this sense of like my pain is worth. You know, I don't know. But one of the things I will say is that, you know, Bree, you brought up some really interesting points. And I think that it's important to kind of clarify how this mixture has come together. So as you mentioned, you know, Joe Biden's support among Black voters has been eroding. That doesn't mean that all Black people, all Black men have turned their backs on Joe Biden. It's not even remotely close to that. But there's enough to more reporting on it probably makes sense, right? Because, you know, these elections are decided sometimes in the tens of thousands over mm-hmm. a handful of states. And so, yeah, any support going one way or the other certainly matters. Joe Biden's administration took office with a lot of promises made to Black people. We're listening. You know, it was big during 2020. We need to listen to Black people, you know, and, you know, these promises or these kind of. How would I say it? Maybe not a promise, but this idea that these things would be addressed, you know, was really pronounced during the campaign. And then during the actual presidency, there's been one thing after another that has come up that has allowed, you know, for these things to be blocked. And we've seen before that President Trump, when he was in office, didn't let something like people blocking him stop him from actually doing what he wanted to do. Exactly. So it taught us that, okay, it's possible if you have the constitution and the fortitude to get it done. And it, by comparison, there's, I'm sure, a lot of people that look at what Donald Trump was able to do despite being opposed almost at every front. And he still got what he wanted out of, you know, his administration, or maybe not all of it. He didn't get that wall, but he got a lot done. Whereas, you know, looking at, you know, Joe Biden, we still don't have our police reform. We still don't have our student loans. We still don't have, you know, a lot of things that would have really made a difference in the lives of Black and brown people, the things that we were asking for. You know, we wanted voter rights, you know, enshrined. We wanted them to be protected. We wanted these like real things that really matter. And we got Juneteenth. And so, you know, that feels like in hindsight, especially very performative. So there's that, right? Mm-hmm. But one of the things, you know, that I think is, and Charlamagne has mentioned this, and I think you were alluding to this too, Bri, is the messaging of, you know, the Democrats, they have not put out exactly what it is that they have accomplished that has benefited Black people. And so, again, while we look around, you know, those kitchen table conversations that you mentioned, and we say, well, look, my bank account ain't doing better under Joe Biden. I think that that's the result of kind of suggestion, you know, particularly from the right. You know, well, they're always complaining about gas prices and complaining about this and that and the third. And the truth is there was a lot of things that were quite a bit worse under the Trump presidency, particularly during COVID and based on Donald Trump's response to COVID. But I'm going to share a bit from the New York Times here just because I feel like it's relevant, especially for our Black audience. Biden's term, wages are now rising faster than inflation. The economy grew 3.1% from the end of 2022 to the end of 2023, defying expectations, including robust growth at the end of the year. The inflation rate is falling toward historically normal levels. U.S. stock markets are recording record highs. And this is as of February 2nd, 2024. So within the last month, the New York Times reported this. The Biden economy is exceptionally strong. But if you just listen to the power of suggestion, you would not know that. If you looked at your bank account, you would not know that. But in terms of how we measure the health of the economy, it's doing great. But there are people that, because they don't know that, because, you know, the Biden administration has kind of flaked on a lot of the really important promises, they might either choose not to vote, especially those people who are very concerned about Biden's response in Gaza, because that has been very problematic. There's a degree of kinship between Black people in this country and Palestinians, right? And this is historically so since the days of MLK and Malcolm X. So there's that. And then, of course, there are people who might be a little less afraid of a Donald Trump presidency now because we've lived under a Donald Trump presidency and the world hasn't come to an end. I'm still one of those people.
They figure we're battle tested. We're battle tested. We've been through, you know, what else could we do that would scare us now about Donald Trump? It's like just day to day. And to your point about Israel and Hamas, I am from the state of Michigan. And so,
yeah, you know,
there was a push here.
Middle Eastern people. Yeah,
exactly. We have the largest population of Middle Eastern people in Dearborn, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is, in our primaries that just took place, of course, Joe Biden won the Democratic nomination. I think it was by 81%. Mm-hmm. There was, however, a percentage of people who voted uncommitted, a larger percentage than they were expecting. Exactly. And the majority of that was in the Arab community, and that is in regard to his response to the Israel-Hamas war. And so, whereas Black people, we have our own agenda that we want taken care of. We have a whole nother demographic of people, especially if you're looking at a state like Michigan, that are concerned about, it matters. And their point is, here on the news, they're highlighting how these protests are happening every day. Mm-hmm. And what the leaders of these protests are saying is that the Biden administration is supporting genocide. Mm-hmm. That is the message that they are pounding.
Genocide Joe.
And, yes. And this is what they're calling him. So that will greatly affect him. It won't just be about Black people coming to the aid of the Democratic Party, especially not in the state of Michigan. It is going to be how he addresses the Arab community, because this is very important to them and they are not backing down. And we also have a Palestinian American person in office, Rashida Tlaib, who did robocalls, sent out over 80,000 of them asking people to vote uncommitted. So I want to say it was between 13 and 17%. I can't remember the exact amount, but a large number of people actually did just that. So it is a wake up call.
Yeah. And that's enough to matter. That's absolutely enough to matter. And so this is something that we all have to pay attention to, you know, and my tendency personally is to, you know, say that that's appropriate. You know, you cannot lesser of two evils everyone in perpetuity into these corners. It is just not a sustainable way of dealing with people, right? So, you know, there's that. But one of the things that I do want to say before we move on is that for a second Trump presidency. What I have studied about what his intentions are, and indeed the intentions that are that exist beyond just a 4-year term that he could potentially serve. I'm speaking specifically to Project 2025. A second Trump presidency could very well enshrine a very different framework into the United States of America, preserving a conservative and deeply conservative framework, regardless of how the population shifts back and forth. And so a second Trump presidency would really open the floodgates for that. This is a concerted effort by not the sum total of all, you know, conservatives in this country, but enough of them in powerful positions to matter, from the local level all the way up to the highest office in the land, to ensure that conservative ideas shape this country into the future, and that no matter how liberal people might vote and how liberal the population might become skewed, there's a lot of brilliant conservative minds that have put together this thing called Project 2025 that they plan on enacting the first day of a new Trump presidency. And so a Trump presidency is still very much scarier for democracy. It doesn't matter what side of the aisle you're on. If you are a fan of democracy and you're a fan of the way this country is supposed to work in theory, a second Trump presidency is very, very dangerous, more so than the first Trump presidency, because now there's no third term for this president. So he's super no holds barred. He does not have to pay attention to anybody. He has 4 years to do what he wants, again, by enshrining this conservative, pro-business, pro-billionaire agenda into the fabric of our society, so that him, his children, his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren can continue to profit off the backs of the rest of us. They will remain perpetually in the 0.001%, and the rest of us will be here on the bottom licking their boots. And so I do not want to be irresponsible in not reporting that. Okay, so if you're not a fan of Joe Biden, join the club. We got a newsletter. But that does not mean that you need to vote for Donald Trump, because it is a lot scarier than you may know. Trust me, I have to research this stuff. Anyway, moving on. A verdict was reached this week in the murder case of hip hop icon Jam Master Jay. Morgan, this time we're going to start with you. What's the latest on this story? And then Bree, we're going to get your reaction as well.
Yes, unfortunately, so this is a case of a drug deal gone bad, and after more than 20 years, this case is closed. Jam Master Jay, whose real name is Jason Mizell, was shot in his Queens, New York studio. Two men were found guilty of the murder, Carl Jordan Jr. and Ronald Washington, and they are both the star's oldest friends. They were friends. They were convicted on all charges in the death of the beloved hip-hop icon, and both men were indicted as a result of a drug conspiracy. They face a minimum of 20 years behind bars and a maximum of life in prison. Prosecutors did not want to seek the death penalty in this case. And a third defendant, Jay Bryant, is also charged, but he is being tried in a separate case that is set to go on trial in 2026. Now, this happened. The group allegedly started pushing drugs as a way to supplement income after Run DMC was supposedly starting to lose their popularity. So this is just a really sad and tragic case.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bree, let's get your input here, too.
Well, yeah, I agree with Morgan that this was sad and tragic. I mean, this happened. I was in high school when Jam Master Jay was murdered. And so the fact that it took this long was tragic. However, I'm glad that there was finally some justice served in his case. It was one of the most notorious unsolved cases in rap history, just like Tupac's murder. And the verdict, as far as the reactions, they've been mixed. Family and friends, I've read some things online who are family and friends of the victim and the defendants, because they were so close. It's a very emotional reaction from many of them, some in disbelief and some are just glad that justice is being served. But they're going to jail for the rest of their lives, prison. Yeah. So the case was also a challenge for the police. They had to overcome the fear and silence of witnesses who knew the killers. So it's not like this went unsolved because nobody knew what happened. They just were afraid to talk about it because street code. So the prosecutors were very adamant about praising their courage and the cooperation of those who chose to do so, who testified at this trial, because it took a lot for them to break that quote unquote cold.
Yeah.
And so now there's an end to the case, and I guess there's sort of a finality about it in the hip hop community. But of course, his legacy's never died down. Run DMC still does shows sporadically. And at that time, I remember watching something where Rev Run basically decided that he was going to go the more spiritual route. And that is why they went on a decline, because he stopped wanting to do those type of shows. He was focused on his ministry. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that put DMC and Jam Master Jay in a predicament. And mm-hmm. they had to figure out, you know, how are we going to sustain ourselves without doing the number of shows and performances that we're used to?
Yeah.
So I wonder, I don't know if Rev Run has reacted. I haven't seen any reaction from him publicly, but I just wonder how he feels and how DMC feels about the verdict, because that was a lot for them. And many people back then were blaming Rev Run for kind of disbanding the group.
Sure, sure. I could see that. Yeah. And then, I mean, in 2002, when this took place, it was a different time. So, you know, just one of those things that kind of lingered in the air for a long time. Obviously, this was the rumor that it was a drug deal gone bad for many, many years. I remember reading about this in magazines. I mean, I couldn't tell you which one, but it was either The Source or Double XL or Murder Dog or Blaze or something. Yeah, it was back in the day. But yeah, I remember reading about this, and that there was some speculation that it was a drug deal gone bad. But that goes to show you, like, as you mentioned, that there's people that will talk to a magazine, but they will not talk to the police, because obviously these are some street dudes, and that street retaliation, that can get you. You know what I mean? Even if you move out, you know, if your mom's still around or your cousin's still around, you know, so
they'll find a way to touch you.
Right. Yeah. So it's better to just not say nothing. So now we're looking at something that's over 20 years old, finally being solved. And there's some closure there, but it doesn't make it any less sad. So Black Information Network news anchors Morgan Wood and Bree Wood are here with us discussing this week's major stories. All right. Some disturbing news out of Virginia surfaced this week regarding an unusual homework assignment for one middle school class. Bree, share with our listeners some more details about this homework assignment and the teacher responsible for it. And then Morgan will follow up with you to get you to weigh in as well.
First of all, this is very scary. I really feel that there are some educators that are just unhinged right now, and this happens to be one of them, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So a teacher from Crestwood Middle School in Chesapeake, Virginia, was arrested, and he had to give up his teaching license after he gave his class an assignment asking them to come up with different ways to kill one of his students. And this was in January of 2022. So the teacher's assignment, he said he was trying to engage his students in creative writing. But that caused some distress in the classroom. And I'm not laughing because I think it's funny. I'm laughing because I don't understand, out of all the creative topics you could have chosen, why you'd make killing a student your creative writing topic. But they said the assignment caused distress and fear among students and their parents, of course, who went home and told their parents about this wacky assignment they had to do. And they gave examples of some of the stories that these students wrote. And they wrote various methods of killing one targeted student. There was a target that they had to write about, and some of the ways that they chose to kill this student would be poisoning, stabbing, shooting, and choking. The teacher did plead guilty to a misdemeanor count of contributing to a minor's delinquency, and he was sentenced to 6 months of probation and 100 hours of community service. They have not named this teacher, so we don't know exactly who it was, but I guarantee he won't be teaching anymore, at least not there.
Not at all. Morgan, let's get your thoughts.
Yeah, I honestly don't even know what to think about the story. Just like Bree said, it's just very disturbing at the fact that this is the teacher that is helping the next generation or educate the next generation. And this is what they came up with. I just think it's a matter of, hello, this is inappropriate for school. We always talk about time and place. And while the subject of killing someone may be a topic to discuss, that's not something appropriate for school ever. Not for school age children, not in school. So I'm not sure what this, I mean, it, like the story says, to engage the students. I get that. You know, it is very difficult to engage the younger generation these days, but I'm not sure why. And then on top of that, to target one particular student and that student to then have to deal with that. But also hearing that that student didn't have a problem with it. They were unbothered by the fact that other classmates were coming up with ways to kill them. Mm-hmm. This is so, I don't know how to put it. It just seems like we're just doing more and more to self-sabotage and desensitize ourselves to things that we actually need to be paying attention to.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I don't, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and digress. This is crazy. But at the same time, forgive me for saying it, it's Virginia. So
what does that mean, Morgan? Right. What does that mean?
Virginia, you know, it's a whole bunch of stuff going on in the Commonwealth that's popping up. And we surprised, we stay surprised, but then yet again, we're never really surprised. So,
but you know, Rams, this is important to note that he did say, oh, this was an error in judgment. Yeah, yeah. I probably shouldn't have done that. Yeah. So yeah, he knows how ridiculous it was, but after the fact.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I think that, yeah, you're right. After the fact, after the students were saying that, okay, well, let's feed them to a dog. Let's throw them out of a building.
Yeah, you know, go ahead like and traumatize sort of your class first, right, and then teach them that that's right, wrong.
so that it is definitely problematic. And as you mentioned, of course, he said that, you know, the student in question was going along with it. I guess the student was known for causing problems in the classroom. And, you know, the student didn't have a problem with it. But I think that there's, I don't know, you don't want to feed into that. I'm sure it can be very frustrating to deal with a student like that, but you don't want to feed into that. But the result of it is that he ended up pleading guilty to one misdemeanor count of contributing to the delinquency of a minor and also surrendering his teaching license. So we don't have to worry about whether or not he'll be in a classroom again.
Right.
Finally, we're going to wrap this week's program with a major political announcement from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Morgan, you cover Washington, D.C. for the Black Information Network. So tell us the latest here. And then, Bree, we're going to come to your for your thoughts as we close out.
Oh, yeah, this is my Mitch McConnell voice.
Sorry. Okay, so Republican Senator.
That was perfect. Spot on.
Republican Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell announced on Wednesday that he will step down as the GOP leader in November. So he made that announcement on the Senate floor saying it's time for the next generation of leadership. Rightfully so. Mm-hmm. And I say that because we have seen multiple instances where Mitch McConnell has, for lack of a better term, glitched, where he was, you know, speaking and then he's kind of stopped speaking and we don't know what's going on with him. The Republican Party and medical advisors have come out and say, well, nothing's wrong with him. He's fine. He's healthy. But at the same time, he is 82 years old and he is going to step down from that role after the November elections. Now, he will, again, serve out the remainder of his term, which ends January of 2027. And he is the longest serving Senate party leader in American history. So there's something to be said about that. He has been elected to lead the Republican conference 9 times since 2006. President Biden is sad to President Biden said he is sorry to hear of McConnell's stepping down and praised him for his honesty. Of course, they have a longstanding relationship due to their decades in the Senate. And we will see. Mm-hmm. I think that this is actually very beneficial for the Republican Party, knowing that, he's in these public roles and he's making these speeches. It's not a good look for him to be, you know, having those issues. So to fill that seat with someone younger and a little more able bodied could put them in a better position. Mm-hmm. Here in the DMV, Democratic Prince George's County Executive Angela Alsobrooks said this about his legacy. She issued a statement saying eliminating Roe, making it harder for women to access abortion, putting IVF at risk, disseminating voting rights, letting Trump off the hook at every possible opportunity, and for his last act, recruiting Larry Hogan to be another vote for Trump's Republican Party. She said that is the legacy that Mitch McConnell will leave.
Well, when you're right, you're right. Bree, let's get your thoughts to close out.
Well, I watched a little bit of him speaking and, he said that he had total clarity and he was at peace about the sunset of his work. And, you know, as Morgan stated, he's going to continue to serve out the rest of his term. But his announcement, you know, it's coming after growing tensions with the Republican Party because they're saying that former President Trump's influence has increased some of his allies. criticizing McConnell's leadership, basically. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of Republicans who do not agree with some decisions that Mitch McConnell has made. And he didn't get a he didn't give a specific reason for his timing for deciding to step down. I personally do believe it has a lot to do with his health, because if you're just listening to him, you have to listen very closely because he's speaking and it sounds kind of mumbled. Yeah. And very low, as if it's speaking difficult for him to speak. Right. So he did mention the recent death of his wife's youngest sister as a factor that prompted him to take a step back. And, you know, I think maybe he's trying to come from the position of spending more time with family as they're getting older. He didn't name a successor either, but possible candidates include John Corwin, Senator John Thune, and also Ted Cruz. His departure, it will have an impact on the future of the country, whether you liked him or you hated him. But he's been a key factor in shaping what the legislative agenda has been for all of these years, including confirming judicial nominees and blocking Democratic initiatives. So this might be the first time in a long time that Democrats are able to get some things done that they have historically had blocked because of Mitch McConnell.
Oh, no. What that?
Well, that's a voice I won't miss. I think he's planning on busting his next move sometime around November, and then January he should be at home relaxing, enjoying the rest of his time there with his family. So that's what we have to look forward to. In the meantime, I'd like to thank you both, as always, for your insight and your brilliance in covering these stories. Once again, today's guests are Black Information Network news anchors Morgan Wood and Bree Wood. This has been a production of the Black Information Network. Today's show was produced by Chris Thompson. Have some thoughts you'd like to share? Use the red microphone talkback feature on the iHeartRadio app. While you're there, be sure to hit subscribe and download all of our episodes. I'm your host, Ramses Ja, on all social media, and I'll be hosting another episode of Civic Cypher this weekend on a station near you. For stations, show times, and podcast info, check civiccypher.com. And join us Monday as we share our news with our voice from our perspective, right here on the Black Information Network Daily Podcast.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating.
I got a big heart, and I'm very forgiving, but like, don't abuse it. It's been abused enough.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.
Every week on Talk Easy with Sam Fragoso, I invite an artist, writer, or politician to come to the table and speak from the heart in ways you probably haven't heard from them before. Some of my favorites are with Tom Hanks, Questlove, and Cate Blanchett. In recent weeks, I had talked to actor Dan Levy, director Ava DuVernay, and the editor of The New Yorker, David Remnick. You can listen to Talk Easy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.